lot of people talk about if you have like thick carpet in your hotel room, which only the really nice ones have it, and like take off your socks and shoes and make balls with your feet. Like you're trying to grab the carpet fibers with your toes. It will eliminate a lot of the tension and stress and everything that comes from the travel.
I was listening to Les Stroud, you know, the Survivor man.
Uh-huh.
He was on Joe Rogan's show and he said the craziest thing. He gets jet lag really bad too, and all he needs to do is walk around barefoot on grass for 20 minutes and he gets rid of it.
Yeah, I don't know about that.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener, it's Wednesday morning, and you are listening to session number 4 of the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast. Tim Conley from The Foolish Adventure Show is here, and you will find out what it's like being a consultant and what it takes to create a successful podcast. This is a weekly podcast, so if you haven't subscribed yet, do it now. Let's go a little bit into your consulting. Like, how did you get into the consulting? How did you get your first couple clients?
Okay, so I got there out of just complete failure. I failed in my original startup, my dot-com era startup back in the late 90s. It was trying to build an international tourism company, and I just didn't know what I was doing, and mainly because I didn't know how to get any customers. And when I finally just shut that down, I just gave up. I wasn't making any money. I was actually in a huge amount of debt. All the investors, they all backed out, and I just shut everything down, and I realized I need to know how to get customers if I'm ever going to be a real entrepreneur. So I started studying direct response, everything. I started some sales training programs. I bought all kinds of cassette tape programs teaching me how to sell and how to close, and went through some sales training programs, one through an insurance company, one through a car dealership. And during the same time, I was still hanging out with my friends in the tech world. And they said, dude, you failed miserably. We're still struggling along. How can we not do what you did?
Oh, nice.
and so my first consulting projects were about not doing what I did. And because I was out of all these people I was surrounded by, I was the only one studying direct response marketing. I was the only one actually studying and putting into practice sales techniques and stuff like that. All of a sudden, I sounded like a genius, even though I had just read it the night before out of a book.
Well, can you recommend one or two books to listeners? Maybe some of the best stuff that they can start with?
Okay, one book, which came a few years after I got started, and I recommend this to everyone. It's Jay Abraham's Getting Everything You Can Out of All That You've Got. I highly recommend people learn something about copywriting. So I would go look for anything they can get by Caples, Caples, Schwartz, Schwab, which is spelled Scswab, I think. I'm not sure if there's an H in there or not.
Okay.
And Sugarman, Joe Sugarman. The sales training cassette tape that was my favorite one, and I think you might still be able to find it, was by Tommy Hopkins. It was like a 12 cassette box set with like workbooks in it. And that was my favorite one that I trained off of. It was the thing that really got me good at getting over the fear of people. I was scared to death. You know, I still don't like rejection, and I was just scared to death of getting rejected by people.
I think that's fairly normal, though. People overall, all of us, we're kind of pussies in a lot of ways, right? Like, we're just scared of what other people, how they will react to us. And I think we have high expectations going into a lot of things. I can imagine a sales guy going into the next place, like, I'm going to sell this place. And by the time he opens the door, he's like, oh, no, what's going to happen if I fail?
Right. Yeah, there's so many things that run through your head, whether you're afraid something's going to happen, mostly because you're putting so much pressure on the outcome, the result of the meeting, as opposed to just going into the meeting and talking to the person on a human to human level. Most people, if they know they're going to meet with the CEO of a Fortune 500 company, they get all worked up about that. People who are into celebrities and they freak out when they meet a celebrity. Oh my God, I met that person. If you're that kind of person, you're going to end up putting lots of pressure on yourself about the outcome of the meeting and not the actual meeting itself.
So what's your strategy for that? Are you one of those guys that pictures all those guys naked?
No.
Just be like, or like pictures them as babies, you know? Because I've heard people teaching that type of stuff.
That never worked for me. That stuff never worked. But what really worked with me is, because the idea is that you have to picture them as just like fallible human beings. They're just another human being, and they're not above you. There's nothing that they really have any power over you. Most people feel that someone else has power over them because their income depends on it, especially like a commissioned salesperson. If this guy says no, then I don't eat. So therefore, he has power over me. And you've got to get away from that fear, because that's just one person out of all the 7+ billion people you could talk to on the planet. That's just one. And that one does not have any power over you. For me, I try to establish that we're on a peer-to-peer level. If anyone tries posturing with me and stuff, I'll crack a joke. And if the person doesn't laugh and the tension doesn't get cut, then what I do is slowly back myself out of the conversation.
One of the best books I've read recently on that is Choose Yourself by James Altucher. And he kind of talks about that too, just how to never have anyone else be kind of in control of your destiny and letting anyone else choose whether you're good enough. And I think that will work really good with sales too.
Right. Part of it's because we're raised to follow arbitrary authority. So from childhood, if our parents say, do this, and you ask why, and they just say, because I said so. And that's your first bit of arbitrary authority. Then you go to school and you get 12 years of arbitrary authority there. Then you go off to university or you go to work, and now you've got someone else giving you arbitrary authority. Same thing with our governments and police. You never know when the authority is going to be implemented. So whether they're going to use their authority and how they're going to use it. So you just obey, and you start fearing that the consequences of all that authority, and that will put you in a position of always being afraid. And that's horrible for success as an entrepreneur.
Yeah, I agree completely. I think it's just having the wrong script. And the faster you realize you can rewrite that script, the better. So let's get into the day-to-day. What's that look like as a consultant?
The day-to-day. Well, I've been calling myself semi-retired since 2008. I don't work as crazy as I used to. In my early career, I worked as much as 60 hours a week, landing clients, doing strategy sessions with clients, and managing a team to build out ad campaigns, to build websites, do search engine optimization. Because my early business, I transformed from just doing some copywriting to actually becoming an interactive agency. That was a crazy time. I worked a lot, did some really fun stuff, got to work with some really good clients, but overall wasn't something that I was happy with. And then over time, I just started cutting out the number of clients I started working on. And if it required a team for me to do it, I usually turn down the project now. If it's one or two people that I can bring in that I know, it's like, oh, this guy and this guy can come in and do these couple of things for me, then yeah, I'll go ahead and take the project. But otherwise, it has to be something that the client can do in-house. So I come in and I help their team actually build out whatever it is and implement the strategy that I set forth for the company. But if it requires me to get a website built for them now, not too keen on doing that stuff anymore.
Oh, that makes sense. I just hate building websites in general for anything. It's just so much work and so much nonsense putting up with web designers. And I have an SEO company, so you can imagine.
Right. But beyond just, say, websites, it's anything. Like I also write some copy for ads, and I'll lay out the idea for an ad. But right now, I don't sit down and make ads anymore. I used to do them all, you know, like do the actual graphic design of the ad, every part of the ad, I used to do it. Now I'll come up with the concept. I might write some of the copy to put a copywriter on the right direction that I want for the entire campaign to meet the strategy, but I don't actually make the whole ad anymore.
And so let's go into your podcast, because some of the things you said the other day when we were in a virtual meetup just fascinated me. Like, you didn't build up the podcast to really get business, which is what I see a lot of people do.
Which is what people should do.
Why did you start that podcast?
I didn't really start it. I got kind of strong-armed into doing it. A buddy of mine, we met at PodCamp Arizona back in 2009, and he was a podcaster and was making a living as a podcaster. And we started talking, and I'm like, hey, you know, you should do this, this, and this to fix your business. He implemented some of it, and he's like, wow, that really worked. And then I end up moving to another side of town, and I show up at a Starbucks to just get some writing done and get out of my home office. And this dude walks in. I hadn't seen him for several months, and he walks in, and I'm like, hey, I know you. And he's like, what? It freaked him out, actually, because here's a guy he had just met months ago, and all of a sudden I'm in the same Starbucks that he frequents on like 3 times a week. I'm like, dude, I'm not stalking you. I just moved in a few miles from this place. And we just started talking, and we would meet up at that Starbucks, and we would have these discussions about internet business. And he would run home, implement the things that I talked about, and it would make him more money. So he said, hey, you know, we should record the stuff that we're talking about here at Starbucks and make that a podcast. And months later, he finally convinced me to actually do it. And we sat down and started recording. And that kicked off my podcasting career.
Okay, the Foolish Adventure Show. But that doesn't seem like someone coming from a kind of an authority. It's like someone that's trying to learn how to do marketing, right? Or that's what it seemed like to me. So I got confused about the whole concept.
Well, there wasn't really a concept. It was just two guys, one who was running a niche membership site and doing very well at that, making in the low six figures, and a guy who's been doing consulting for businesses for a whole bunch of years. And it was just us talking about the things that would make a business successful and how to go about doing it. And it did attract a lot of newbies, like people who wanted to get into this whole internet business thing. And that really was not my crowd. The people who hire me, they're usually making a million or more per year. I usually don't take anyone doing greater than $5 million a year, mostly because they have too much bureaucracy built into their company by that time. But in the $1 to $5 million range, those are usually my clients. So somebody coming in wanting to start a niche site on how to make money from their basket weaving hobby was not my market.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing, because when I listened to your podcast before, this was like 2 or 3 years ago, that's what I thought it was aimed at. It was at the newbies, and I kind of gravitated towards like Freedom Ocean, you know, with Trammy and
Tim Reed.
Yeah, because I thought they were a little more, you know, going into like the technical things. But I realized after a while, like if Tim actually put all the stuff he knows into these podcasts, it'd be huge. But it just seemed like you didn't give out implementation type stuff to on the podcast. It was just something there.
In the early days, when Izzy was with me as the co-host, he didn't want to go after anyone who was experienced, because he felt that he didn't know enough. Even though he'd been doing his podcast by that time, I think he'd been doing it for 3+ years and had 3+ years of experience, but he still felt he didn't really know anything about internet business, because most of the things I was saying was complete news to him. He's like, I've never heard this before. And so he felt very uncomfortable talking about things that were at a higher level. And then after he left, I changed the show over to an interview format. I decided I wanted to have kind of a conversations with smart people, because I know a lot of really talented business people, and they're a lot of fun. So I thought, hey, why don't I get them on the show, and that'll be a cool show to have.
Yeah, I think it was really hard for some people to change into that new format. Once you kind of, they remember, like, that's what I remember the old format. So what do you think about it? Like, which direction is it going? Should all people have podcasts? Like, just what are your thoughts on this stuff?
Currently, we're in an upswing in podcasting. Myself, our friend Dan Andrews, we've been talking about people need to podcast for the last 3 years. We've been telling people that for 3 years now. Go start your podcast. Go do this. Well, there is this new upswing in podcasting, and I think it's finally here to stay. When I got into podcasting 4 years ago, everybody was saying it was dead. Its time had come. It had been around since 2001, 2002 MP3 players. 2001 MP3 players came out, I think, but they took technical experience to actually get an MP3 onto them. They were not easy to use. But a few years later, after the MP3 came out, podcasting started. A dude from MTV was Adam Curry, I think. He was like the very first podcaster. So from that point, from his show to about 5 years ago, podcasting seemed like it was going to be a solid business. And then all of a sudden, it just had like this very fast drop off. 2008 to 2010, podcasting was dead.
What do you think happened?
I think most people realized they couldn't make any money at it. And they tried and tried for years, and then they quit.
So it's not that the listeners left, it's just that the people doing them didn't know how to monetize it properly.
Right. They didn't know how to create a business from it. And so a lot of the original people disappeared. But there were a lot of people, like my former business partner, Izzy, and Dan something, runs the 5x5 network, which is a podcasting network. Leo Laporte, he's been around. He's one of the original guys. He's been around forever. And they've all figured out a way to make a lot of money from podcasting. And we're starting to see a resurgence of it because people like John Lee Dumas with his Entrepreneur on Fire has been able to make a decent amount of money from it. And there's more people who are figuring out the monetization thing. So I think that's spurring this new wave of podcasters. But the one thing I do understand about podcasting is it's really hard to do a decent job. So a lot of them are going to fade out in the next year or so. But the technologies are getting easier. The ability to create a decent podcast are getting easier. And all it comes down to now is talent and promotional capacity. If you can come up with a decent show, build that kind of camaraderie that people really want from a show, and understand that you're an entertainer first and a business second, then people will listen to your show. The business second part is still the critical part, because if you can't fund it, it's not going to stick around. And if you're not making enough money, you're not going to feel it's worth all the effort that you're putting in.
Yeah, it takes a lot of time, especially someone doing it by themselves and trying to get a real decent job going. It could be 8 to 10 hours just editing the podcast. What would your advice be, I guess, for all those people that now are hearing from Dan Andrews or yourself or, you know, the many others, do a podcast?
I think podcasting is kind of becoming like a blog, in that you kind of need one. The problem is that, just like blogs, if you do a crappy job, they're going to hurt you more than they're going to help you. So most people shouldn't do a blog. Most people shouldn't do a podcast.
But that, everyone's just saying everyone should be doing a podcast. So now.
Yeah, well, they should. But the thing is most people really shouldn't, because, and I know that's contradictory, but the reason is you really have to put some craft into it. You have to learn how to be a character. You've got to entertain people. And a lot of people don't want to do the work necessary. They just want all the benefits of podcasting.
It's like, what's the quickest way of getting money out of my customers or listeners? Like, I've been hearing that a lot, you know, when people talk about starting podcasts. And then I start thinking, there's going to be a bit of a time where you're going to have to just work for nothing. And that's like with any business almost. With a podcast, I can't imagine anything less than 6 months to a year where you can actually make a living off of it. I might be wrong, but I just don't see it.
Well, John Lee Dumas is an outlier, so he was able to make a living off of his in the very first year. But that's an outlier. Most people won't be able to do it for probably 2 to 3 years if they start the podcast and then they try to start a business, which is what John Lee Dumas did. He started a podcast and then tried to build a business off of that, and he did. Most people will never be able to accomplish that. But if you have a business that is actually already making money, then a podcast is a great way to get more people to that business.
So what would be some promotional strategies for someone completely new? Maybe they have some kind of a service they're selling offline and they're just starting to dabble in the whole online world. There's a lot of people like that. And they don't really have a good network to promote stuff through and don't really know where to go. What would the first 3-4 steps be for something like that?
If they don't have much of a network, well, then there's a problem right there. You're in business, you don't have much of a network, then you better get one. We're still all human beings, and we still want to be connected to other human beings. So you need to do that.
And I'm glad you mentioned that too, because I see a lot of people think that when they get on the internet, it's just going to be them behind the laptop and things will just somehow happen.
Magic will happen, yes.
Yeah, the magical unicorns will come with 50 clients. That doesn't happen. So step one is build a network. What would be step two?
Even in the process of building a podcast, which I've gotten, my network expanded dramatically from having the Foolish Adventure Show. Even though the show itself was never designed to get me a single client, the podcast itself has built some of the best friends I've got all over the world. They heard the show, they contacted me, we ended up finding out we liked each other, became friends, and I have traveled to the Philippines, I've traveled to Bali, I've traveled to Thailand, all because of people I got connected with because of my podcast. So the podcast itself is going to help expand your network. But to actually get the show going, you're going to need to tap into your initial network and say, hey, you know, go check this thing out. Hopefully you've done a decent job and people like it and will then share it with other people. The other side of that is you need to start reaching out to your market. If you already have a business, you know that people buy certain things, well, then you need to let those people know that there is a show that is going to benefit them and for them to just go check it out.
It's a snowball effect, right? I mean, initially there's a lot of work and you've got to push it, but once it starts rolling, you have much less work and you don't know how big this thing could get.
Yeah. Before you know it, 1 million people have listened to your show.
That's actually very reasonable too after a couple of years. How do you actually build a brand these days?
The brand gets built by getting customers. So Dropbox became a brand and is now a verb, which is one of the best things you can ever have as a brand name. To get Googled, to FedEx something, to Dropbox that to me. If you can get that, if you can become a verb, then you've definitely made it as a brand. So Dropbox, they started accumulating a lot of customers and they put in a decent compensation plan. They don't pay affiliates or anything, but they allowed you to share Dropbox with other people because Dropbox is kind of worthless without the network effect. You need a network for it to become valuable, kind of like fax machines. Having one fax machine, completely worthless. Two, not very, very much use out of that. But when the whole world had fax machines, then faxes were very valuable. Same thing with Dropbox. So you need to get a lot of customers. So they made it easy for people to get other people to come in, and it gave them more space inside of Dropbox, which made Dropbox more useful to them. They built their brand off of acquiring customers, not doing Super Bowl commercials or something.
Let's say there's a creative person out there, a photographer or an artist, and would it be better for them to try to brand themselves as their name or come up with one of these, you know, quirky words that maybe will catch on and try to brand it as a company?
Depends on their goals and their business model. If you're a photographer and you always want to stay the artist, then it makes sense to use your name and build up your own personal brand. If you intend to have photography studios around the world. Granted, that's an anachronism. They're going away. But say that was your goal. You were going to have photography studios all over the world. Then you would want to have a brand for that photography studio and not your personal name, because it won't help.
So part of it is the exit strategy.
Oh, it's not so much an exit strategy, but the way the business operates. So if it's around you and you getting compensated directly for your own work, a personal brand is fantastic for that. So if you're going to be a speaker, an author, any kind of artist where the payment comes around your celebrity, then having a personal brand is critically important for that. Like with myself, I've got Marketing for Founders, which is to be descriptive of what it is that I'm doing. But it's like, you're listening to Marketing for Founders. I'm Tim Conley. So I let people know who I am, the person talking to them in this podcast. And I need to do things to build my personal brand or people won't even listen to me. But I'm also building a software company right now. And it's not going to have me anywhere on it other than one of the people who works there. That's the only mention of me. The rest of it is all going to be around the software company itself, because right. No one is going to buy it because of me.
That makes a lot of sense. Can you tell me a little bit more about this new membership site that you have?
Okay, so I was joking about this with a friend recently, because I was like, this is the first time I've actually said this out loud. I started a new membership site to help offset my lowered consulting fees because of the software company I'm starting. So this is completely roundabout thinking and wrong thinking. So I knew that when I get fully into the software company, I'm not going to be able to take on any clients, which means my personal income is going to tank. And to prevent me from dipping too far into my savings to fund the software company, I went about making this membership site. And I was using my connections, my little bit of internet fame, and the fact that I'm a consultant and most people who know me as that. So with a friend of mine, we did a bunch of episodes to find out if there were any interest in becoming a consultant or consultants who wanted additional help at becoming a better consultant. If there was any interest in that, then we would make something for them. And we did a series of 3 podcast episodes, and we got a lot of feedback. We sent people to a survey, and they said, hey, we would love a community. So we built one, and we charged for it immediately. There was no free trials, nothing. It's $100 a month. You join or you don't join. No, this is not a place for tire kickers. And we limited the first batch to 20 people. And we got those 20 people our first 6 days, I think it was, 5 or 6 days. So we got the 20 people in, and then we got those settled. And now we've opened it up, and we kept it closed for almost a month. And we just recently opened it back up. And now we're at like 30 something people. We're now going to actually go into marketing this thing. So the goal was I would be able to have a small stream of income coming from this new membership site being run by my partner, because that's the deal we set up. And that would allow me to focus on the other company, and I wouldn't have to dip into savings. So like I said, roundabout thinking and the wrong way to go about building a whole nother business. You don't build a business to fund another business.
Yeah, that does sound kind of off, but I've done it myself before, so I understand. Yeah. It seems like it's working, right?
Yeah, oh yeah. Mostly because I knew there was this, I had this feeling that there was this low-hanging fruit that was there because of the fact that I've been doing the Foolish Adventure Show for almost 4 years. And I had this other podcast, and I've become in my own little bit internet famous about being a consultant. And in the process of launching it, we've discovered there is actually a pent up demand for a consultant's community. And now we just have to go out and let more consultants know it exists, because we've tapped into a nerve here.
I think it's brilliant. And I actually spoke with a couple of people maybe a few months before you launched this. And I was asking them too, like, how come I haven't seen a community yet for consultants? And yeah, you just built it. So I think it's great. I think people should go. What can people expect though from if they join this community?
Okay, so in Consulting Fuse, the main part of it is being in a community. So everyone else in this community is actively building a consulting business, either as a freelancer, a consultant, coach, or a done-for-you service provider, which could be anything. We've got guys who actually do email marketing for companies, and it's a complete service. They write the copy, they set up the software, they do everything. And then we have some people who are copywriters, so we have some people who do IT consulting. So they go into a company and write code for that company. There's this a wide range of consultants, and strangely enough, they all seem to gel. Like at first I was really worried, like if we opened it up beyond my sphere, which is marketing consulting, if we open it up to IT people and copywriting people and pay-per-click people, would they gel together? And turns out, because they have so many common problems, like how to get clients, how to keep clients and all that stuff, that they've worked very well together. The other side is we do a Q&A session every month. We have a training session that happens every month, and then one expert interview where we bring in an expert to kind of teach what they have done well in consulting.
Groups like this are huge, and I get the whole being kind of a ronin, a samurai, trying to do all the things and take on the world by yourself, but things don't work that way. I mean, when you got a group really bouncing off ideas and thinking of the best strategies to put you out of business and you don't even know about this, you will lose eventually. And I've seen that work with a lot of different communities. And you might hate it. You might be like, oh, those guys are all against me. But no, you could be in a group like that too. You know, it's just when you put the minds together of people doing the same thing, crazy things happen.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. And one of the things we found is that there's some people in there who needed retargeting. Does anyone in here know about retargeting? And one guy raises his hand. That's what I do for a living. Oh, can you help me out? That was a benefit that I figured would happen, but I didn't think it would happen within the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, because I mean, you only had like 20 or 30 people.
Exactly. Right. We had 20 people in there in the first 2 weeks. And already they were like, hey, you can actually help me do what I need done. So I'd like to hire you to do that.
Tim, this was awesome. I think we're going almost on an hour.
What? I thought we were just getting started.
Tell people where they can find you, where they can follow you, because they really should.
Right now, my personal website is being redesigned, which is just timconley.co. So TimConley.co. But you can easily get me on Twitter. That's probably the best way to communicate with me. And that's just Tim Conley, TimConley, on Twitter.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review in iTunes. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebes. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.